When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Brandon Tierney, Sal Licata back on the Fan. Tom Nearden with the crown topic of the day. And there are two, as we start the show talking about the New York Jets, BT. Your Jets get in a game last night where I just waved the white flag. Mercy, I couldn't watch anymore. The awful football in the first half. The Jets, though, get their thing, get their act together in the second half and win a game. And now, while I don't believe in them because of the coaching, because of the little things that add up ultimately to losses, there is a path. You can make the case that the Jets season isn't over just yet.
It's not. And last night was a totally, you know, different set of emotions because the carryover in the first half was, think about the path. To deal with last night, I got to take a step back to the Patriots game where, remember, the Jets burned three timeouts in the first quarter.
Right.
Four penalties, they miss the PAT, and of course they lose a game that basically will probably, at the end of the day, ruin their season. And then last night they come out, and there's no points, and there's miscommunication. It looks like the same thing, right?
Bad throws, drops,
yep, roughing the kicker. With the drop, roughing the kicker on the 15-yard, even though it was, even it was 4th and 21, but it was still automatic first
missed
down.
Missed tackles.
Oh, they missed a lot of tackles, this Jets team, they do, particularly Sauce. So then something magical happened. Aaron Rodgers started to look a little bit like Aaron Rodgers. And Garrett Wilson looked like Garrett Wilson. And then Devontae got involved and the pass rush was ferocious. Listen, I understand that even though they came in at 6-2, the Texans are a flawed team. And I'll put money down. Texans are doing nothing this year because their offensive line is not good. They give up a ton of sacks, ton of pressures. Tunsil's a disaster on the left side. Both of their wideouts were out last night. But for the sake of the big picture conversation for the Jets, it doesn't matter because the Jets have had issues as well. They've had injuries, and nobody feels sorry for anybody in the NFL. You either win or you lose. And last night, by begging, it's amazing that it's November 1st and it's their third win of the season.
Yeah.
But sometimes you benefit from the circumstances of others, and it's just one of those wacky years. And when I look at the last and final wild card spot, and I project forward, and I say, all right, what's it gonna take to get there? Well, 9-8 is not inconceivable. And if the Jets go 6-2 the rest of the way, they'll be 9-8. And they got a lot of wins or winnable games coming up. And the way Rodgers looked is what gives me at least a little fuel to say, why not us?
I have at least two reasons to believe it's possible. Again, not likely, and I would not bet that it's going to happen, but I do think it's possible. The main reason is Aaron Rodgers. The second reason, and I know Rodgers hasn't been great, but still, he's Aaron Rodgers, and you started to see signs of that last night. The second reason is because of the schedule. They have a bunch of winnable games, especially if Miami is not rolling with, you know, if Tua is healthy, then they're at least a dangerous opponent. But if Miami doesn't have Tua, or they're and even with Tua back, they lost last week, they look more vulnerable. I mean, those are now two winnable games at Arizona, Indianapolis, home against the Colts, home against the Seahawks, the two at Miami, at Jacksonville, home against the Rams. Like, those are winnable games. I don't think it's far-fetched, BT, to say that they could go 6-2 and maybe 9 wins could get them in. But it's a lot of the other things, the drops, the missed tackling, the bad coaching, the bad fundies, whatever you want to, however you want to label it.
Yeah.
To me, I've just seen too much bad to believe that the Jets are likely to go on that type of run.
Yeah, I get it. And that's probably where the smart money should go. But before last night, you wouldn't bet a penny on the Jets to make the playoffs. This, at least, now that there's varying degrees of confidence, and I accurately speak for myself, watching them go from in one game with one win from 10th, two-tenth from 15th, which is where they were out of 16 teams. The only team behind them was the Titans, who they beat in week 2 out there in Tennessee. So they went from 15th place. God, that just sounds gross.
Yeah.
It is. To 10th. And I'll tell you where I'm at now. Aside from the fact that I think that they could win more games and rip off a little bit of a win streak and see where this takes us. This weekend, since the Jets are in play, there's a lot of dog games this year. Like, there's some weird games this week,
yeah.
Right? And you mentioned this even before I noticed it when you were putting the helmets together in studio.
For our weekly schedule, yes.
Yep. Yeah, like, man, there's a lot of bad games. I'm looking, yeah, that's weak, that's ugly, that's gross. But now there's at least a couple of games just from a Jets perspective that you pay attention to. Like, all right, the Raiders-Bengals game. I do think the Jets will absolutely have a better record than the Raiders, but if the Raiders were to mess around and beat the Bengals, that's not a bad thing. The Browns, they have 2 wins. I don't think the Browns have a lot of wins when it's all said and done, but they're at home. Chargers, 3,000 miles across the country. If they could beat the Chargers right now, who are the 7th and final playoff team, suddenly the Chargers are 4-4. Maybe that feels a little different. And you just start to, all right, the Ravens are playing the Broncos. There's no chance Denver's winning that game. So Denver goes from 5-3 to 5-4, and who knows, are they a game away from a 3-game losing streak? They could be. What I'm saying is this, without taking it between and through every single game here, the Jets won, they moved up 5 slots, and I'm now looking at the rest of the games this weekend saying, all right, man, if this happens and that, and I didn't think I'd get to this point.
Right.
Based on where they were before last night.
At least to a certain extent, the season is back on. The other thing that we discussed was the Yankees and just their lack of organizational fundamental or player development, however you want to label it, has been exposed now, or it has been exposed, but it's starting to become more of a thing where Joel Sherman of the Post wrote about it, the Dodgers scouts pinpointing all the things that the Yankees don't do well, defensive positioning, the Dodgers could take advantage of things on the base paths, the Yankees put pressure on them, sloppy defense, all those things that we saw all year long, and it's the reason why I didn't believe in this Yankee team. We saw it in the World Series play out. All those things were brought to the forefront by Joel Sherman and the Dodgers scouting, the Dodgers talking about it, basically mocking the Yankees even after this loss, now getting exposed to a point where the Yankees have a big problem. We've known that this has been the case. It's why we called for change years ago. It's not that Brian Cashman is a bad general manager, just that we felt that it was time for change of organizational beliefs and principles and
different
things like
philosophy.
That. Now they made the World Series, so nothing's going to change. Boone's going to be back, but Cashman's going to be here. Then how will it change when the Yankees continue to build the team the same way?
Well, it probably won't change unless they really, like, they don't necessarily have to overhaul. I wish that they would, but to answer you directly, how could it change? Well, they don't necessarily need to overhaul their organizational philosophies, but if they make 2 or 3 astute transactions this offseason, then suddenly some of those flaws that are painfully apparent that is written about in the Post, that is a scathing piece. I said to Sal when we got into this a couple hours ago, I think it's the most interesting baseball article that I've read pertaining to a New York team. I can't remember the last time I saw something this revealing and this embarrassing from the Yankees' perspective. So I think that we all knew, the Yankees aren't a really good base running team. Yankees don't really catch the ball. Yankees have a couple of guys out of position. But to see it quantified, and to see it so obviously a part of the Dodgers' conviction as to almost how easy it would be to beat them, if this is not a wake-up call, I don't know what to tell Yankee fans. It's not going to change then.
BT and Sal on the Fan, our friends at Town Fair Tire remind you that at Town Fair Tire, you always get the guaranteed lowest price on name brand tires from Connecticut to Maine. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. We'll have a pair of Giants tickets to give away in the 1 o'clock hour. We'll get into the Giants. We have Nick Costos coming up at 12:20. Perfect parlay pick segment at 1:20. Let's hear from you guys. Sean is calling from Brick, New Jersey. What's up, Sean?
Good afternoon, boys. How are we doing?
Good. How are you?
What's happening, buddy?
Good. BT, I'm with you, man. It's hard not to buy in. But the emotional roller coaster at 60-minute Jet game is just crazy. The first half with the roughing the punter and the fumble with the rookie, and then obviously what we saw in the second half.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, with with the bye coming up, I think, you know, the defense is getting healthy. I mean, this first time against Arizona, we're going to have a full defense, hopefully, with Mosley back at linebacker. I mean, I love Sherwood, but he's undersized in there.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to have Adams back in the secondary, which is probably our best tackler back there. And you're going to get Reddick with 3 weeks of playing now, you know? So it could be scary defensively.
Yeah, and I wouldn't use the, and I love the energy and I love, you know, the optimism. Use the word buying in. I don't know that it's so much a buying in on even on my end. Then I'm fairly enthusiastic about the prospects of potentially saving the season. You know, I don't want to overstate this here, but it's not a buy-in as much as it is to, I think, a reaction to a multiple set of circumstances. Partly what Rodgers put on film last night and the receivers and whatever and the other things that the last caller said about the defense getting healthy, and those are pertinent things, but also about, I think, the opportunities that maybe the state of the AFC are going to present based on some other flaws on other teams.
Yeah, buying in is not the right term, I don't think. But believing that they could still save their season here. And again, even getting to 9 wins, that might not be enough. We're not saying they're going to go 7-1 here, which would be a tough ask over any team over the course of 8 weeks, especially a team that's lost 6 of their first 9 games. So that's not the case, but there is reason at least to have some hope based on Rodgers, based on what you saw in the second half, based on the schedule. Even look at the rest of the AFC, like, man, your Chiefs and Ravens, it's the Chiefs, then maybe the Ravens, and then, at least for me, everybody else.
Well, the Bills. I think the Bills.
I might even put them a notch below Baltimore. Me,
talk
myself.
About the Bills below Baltimore.
Yes.
No, me too. But the Bills are definitely ahead of the Jets.
Right.
Kansas City, Baltimore, I mean, Bills.
Yeah, there are a lot of teams ahead of the Jets. But outside of those three teams and different, I just didn't want to lump the other teams in with the Chiefs. I think the Chiefs above everybody else.
I think the Ravens are right there with them. I don't think the Chiefs are definitely better than Baltimore
until they actually beat them.
Understood, but yes, Baltimore Chiefs, runs the hell out of it.
Chiefs, Baltimore, Bills, like. Those teams, and if the Jets are at their best, which we haven't seen anything close to that, you can argue that maybe they have a chance more so than other teams in the AFC with a better record because of Rodgers and because of the talent that the Jets have on the football field, or at least on paper, and we saw it translate a little bit in that second half.
Yeah, I think that that's fair. I think that, you know, there's elements, although it's not a complete looking in the mirror, so to speak, because we used the Mets analogy earlier in the show. Like, why not the Jets? I mean, the Mets were 0-5. The Mets were 11 games under 500. Now, the difference is there were two totally different set of circumstances in terms of what to expect. The Mets were rebuilding. Stearns assessed the roster, hope for the best, maybe, you know, be competitive somewhat in September. That was one thought process, which was generally shared by the majority of baseball people, including Met fans. The Jets, it was, hey, they might mess around to get to the Super Bowl.
Right.
So their start represented this incredibly, you know, polarizing and disappointing sense of underachievement. But again, I use the term, it's not always linear. And, you know, it doesn't always go point A, point B, point C. And just in a straight line, they're like the stock market. There's ups and downs. And as long as you get up at the right time and the others are down, you can cash in.
Sam is calling from Brooklyn. What's up, Sam?
Yes, hi. I want to go back to the Yankees. I have to dwell on this a little bit. Number one, Boone has to get fired.
He's not.
With so much talent, you can't come tell me, oh, we won so many games, we made a deep playoff. This is the first deep playoff run. We beat two very mediocre teams. He has to get fired.
But why, though? Why? Why do you think he has to get fired?
Because this many mistakes, there's no accountability, there's no... I don't know.
Right, but
so many mistakes in one game. The fifth inning.
Right, do you blame him, though? You blame him for Aaron Judge dropping a can of corn?
No, I believe this particular game is Aaron Judge's fault, by the way.
Okay, but give me the reasons why you think Boone should be fired.
Because there's no accountability.
I agree with that.
Being good with the players over and over again, not, you know, coming to the podium and yeah, this and that, being so bland, nothing, no enthusiasm, no nothing. I don't know.
Well, Sam, let me inject this, and thanks for the call, man. He's not going to get fired, so let's just get that out there. He's got an option for 2025. They're going to pick it up, and he will be back. But
the reports were that he's likely to be brought back.
Exactly. I saw Andy's report as well. He's going to be back. Now, that doesn't mean we can't have the conversation. Should he be back? I mean, the conversation about Boone being back, and certainly Cashman, has predated you and I working together, and it's certainly been around for a couple of years. And I think each year that they get further away from a championship, I think the merit for those discussions grows. So I don't think it's an irresponsible, unfair conversation to have about Boone. I'm not talking about Cashman now. It is what it is. It's on. Now, you don't win, and you looked ugly. I think that the lack of the lack of buttoned up baseball to me, I just can't ignore it anymore, Sal. I can't. And it's got to be an expiration point on a level of acceptance for something that is so substandard.
I agree.
Come on.
I agree, but whose fault is it?
Oh, ultimately, it's the person who picks the players, and it's okay. An organizational thing. I get it.
And to Sam's point, and you've said this too, like there's a lack of accountability, and Boone just continues to talk up his players, the right word, protect his players, which they love. That is also by design. The Yankees organization hired Aaron Boone to protect his players and build up his players and not get on them and hold them accountable the way that we believe players should be held accountable. So Boone is doing his job. And I would say doing his job well. Now, you could certainly pick apart some of his decisions, and he really hasn't been graded so far on his decisions until the World Series where the Yankees had a chance to win. Like, and a team that they were facing that was better than them. Like, sometimes you need the manager to make great decisions to be able to overcome not being as good as the opponent. He did not have a great World Series. He made some mistakes. Even if it's just game one where he admitted he made a mistake, even if it's just that, that could have cost the Yankees a series. That, to me, is a different argument than he should be fired because players aren't held accountable. The Yankees organization doesn't want that. They also brought in these type of players.
All right, now let's go back to, and I hear you, and that's been your position with this for a couple days now, and really and beyond that. So we disagree.
Right.
And I do like Aaron, but I mean, at some point, I mean, something's got to change. Yeah,
right.
I mean, geez.
Okay, but then let's say they did make a change.
Okay.
Like, do you think the Yankees' issues are because of Aaron Boone and what he's doing? I'm not saying that he's been different. You know, he's changed it to make it better.
Uh-huh.
But do you think that the issues are because of what Boone does or because of how the organization has been operating here for years?
I think it's more the latter.
Right.
So that's where I give Boone not a pass, but I recognize the pecking order of power and the joint decisions that I'm not saying Boone has no juice, but he's not determining who they draft or who gets called up to AA and what they preach at the lower level of the minors, which absolutely defines who you are when you actually make the majors. No, that's not his problem. That's not his job. So I gloss over that, and I position the arrow where it should be, and that's really at everybody else but him. However, when they hired him 7 years ago from the broadcast booth, if I said to Hal Steinbrenner the day that he was introduced, hey, Hal, hey, by the way, by year seven, you're going to have statistically proven the worst base running team in baseball, and you're going to again be one of the sloppiest, worst defensive teams in baseball. Not year one, not year two, where you inherit something and you don't have time to clean it up. Year seven, and it seems to be getting worse. That's my problem. That is my problem. Now, again, who you inherit, that's one thing. But if there's... I don't even know who the person will be, and he's not going to get fired, so it's a moot point. But if the right person was brought in on the first day that they meet down in Tampa, if the lines are drawn, if you guys color out, I'm not saying you treat them like nine-year-olds, but you guys, if we don't do this, it's not acceptable. However you want to, you know, then crack the whip or whatever, treat them like pros. But you've got to communicate to them what you expect. And if he is communicating what to expect and they're not doing it, then his method of communication is not very effective. I don't doubt that Aaron Boone is saying and trying to enforce the details of fundamental baseball. Of course, he's a baseball man. He's not a dummy. I get that. But it's not working. So
correct.
After a while, I don't care how you're doing it. I want to know, is it done?
I think Boone can be better. Let's look across town. I think Carlos Mendoza has played the balance perfectly. Where he's, you think Carlos Mendoza has respect of his players? Do you feel like he supports
Definitely.
His players?
Yeah.
But do you feel like he holds his players accountable?
I do.
Right.
I feel like I've seen a lot of press conferences where he's, you know, not raw, not sloppy,
so
but
there's a way,
no doubt.
There's
more transparent than Boone.
Correct. There's a way to do it. Now, the Mets may have struck gold with Mendoza because I think he might be rare in that regard, that he has the perfect balance. He's a guy who should have gotten opportunity probably years ago, waited, and the Mets got him at the perfect time, and he is the right guy. Now, look, there are years to go. Let's see how it works out, but year one, I have not been as impressed with a manager, maybe ever, than Carlos Mendoza, especially in today's game. So could Boone be better? Yes, I think he could be better with some in-game stuff, with the way that he balances being a player's manager and holding guys accountable.
Can I just ask you something? Yeah. And I love Mendoza. So let's say Mendoza's in year seven, and they're the worst base-running team, and they're among the top three worst, sloppiest defensive teams. You still want this guy coaching
well,
your team?
What I was going to say is that I think the Yankees' problem is deeper than that.
I agree with that.
I think it's organizationally. David Stearns purposely brought in Harrison Bader to play center field and be the defensive center fielder for a year, knowing that they, like the Mets, and it's not just him, the Mets put an importance on defense. The Yankees haven't done that. The Mets, for the first time, have guys playing proper positions. The Yankees haven't done, even the guy that they bring in at the deadline. It's why I said Jazzwell's going to fix their problems. Yeah, on paper, oh, big name, Jazz Chisholm. Yeah, he's got some pop. Yeah, he was like Babe Ruth when he first got here. He's playing out of position. He's also a guy who's not going to put the bat on the ball all the time. Like, there are fundamental issues with the way Brian Cashman and the Yankee front office has built their teams for years. To me, that's a bigger issue than anything Aaron Boone might have done.
I think the biggest problem in the Yankees organization at this point is that they don't know. I know Pettit comes and throws batting practice when they're playing a lefty, and we love when they're facing a lefty, and we love Andy, and all the old champions are around in spring training. Guidry, we know that, all right? But I don't, and if I'm wrong, I stand corrected, and I apologize. I don't think that there's a former player that is really, really, really high on the pecking order of power like Stick Mikel was. Now, Stick Mikel was not a good player, couldn't hit. He could field. Stick Mikel was not a good baseball player in terms of any sort of, he was average, but he could pick it a little bit, but he was a baseball lifer who could identify talent. And when George obviously got banished, Stick took over. And I'm not saying that you have to be, Stearns isn't a former player. I'm not saying that you have to be that guy. Leon Rose didn't play. He's changed to Knicks. I get it. But I think the checkpoints, the various checkpoints throughout the Yankee franchise has always had a former player that has commanded attention and had juice in a room when it was time to make a decision. And I think it's time to get that again. Now, I know that Derek's never going to want to manage because that, with all that money, why would you want to work that hard? But I would not be against Derek coming in, if he even wants to do it, and say, hey, Derek, what do we have to fix? Hey, he's on the set. He's talking shop with A-Rod and Big Papa. He knows who hustles, who
doesn't.
How about
Derek and Donnie? Derek to be the GM, Donnie to be the manager.
Yeah, I mean, Donnie, I wish he was, I think...
Derek and Donnie, double D. It's the Derek and Donnie show.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, the Stick Mikel, the ability to look at a franchise and know from a former player's perspective what's required, even if you're not a former star, I think that that's borderline paramount, and the Yankees do not have that. Yeah. And more specifically, the Yankees, not only do they not have that, they have a lot of voices who didn't play the game that have the ultimate power, that have had the ultimate power forever. So it's the same people saying the same thing in the same room.
And now he did try to bring in Sabian, Omar Minaya, guys like that as well.
Yeah, Sabian didn't play the game, but I love Sabian. Well, Minaya didn't play at that level, and I love Minaya. Do they have the real voice? Did they bring him in to appease us? Or do they actually ask them what they think and do what they say?
Stearns didn't play the game, but he brought in a player like Tyrone Taylor who he knows how to... Think about it. Like, where's the Yankees' Tyrone Taylor? A bench player that could play, play in the outfield like that, just be a gamer, put the bat on the ball.
Yeah,
play,
maybe
play good
Christian was supposed to be there, but you didn't see him once. Dominguez, the Uber prospect, he pinch ran twice. He didn't get one at bat.
Stearns isn't a former player. I know the Mets had Beltran in the organization, which helped. Yeah, I mean, look, bottom line is something needs to change. You just can't keep
going. But nothing is going to change. That's why I'm not happy. Yeah. Hey. And that article was...
Hey, but they did get to a World Series. BT and Sal back on the Fan. We'll get back to your calls in just a little bit. Right now, we have on the line the host of You Better, You Bet, and Odyssey Sports Betting Insider, Nick Costos. Insider calls are presented by BetMGM. Go check out all the latest lines today on the BetMGM app. Also, be sure to listen to the You Better, You Bet podcast. For more analysis, just search You Better, You Bet wherever you find your podcast. Nick, are you over the Yankees loss yet?
Yeah, we suck, it sucks. It sucks to suck. Yeah, it was really annoying. Hmm. This is really pathetic, and I understand that. I'm actually happy it's over, because I think about myself tonight, like after I get off the air, my show's done at 7 o'clock, and I get ready to watch Game 6. How pissed I would be at Carlos Rodon basically as soon as the game started. I don't think they would have won Game 6 tonight. Of course, as a fan, you would have liked to seen that happen. But how can you make the case after the fact, after that fifth inning? And BT, I thought you were so right. I saw the clip on social yesterday. It's the worst 25 minutes basically in your life as a New York sports fan. Just terrible, that top of the fifth. How can you think that they were going to win two games in LA? Like, at least I can go to sleep early tonight. Like, thank God it's over. Put us out of our misery.
To win the four straight was not going to happen in on almost every level, but That's a chance I was willing to take, man. I mean, I was already, when we're up 5-0, I'm thinking, all right, nothing early Saturday, no soccer games early, no football getting, nothing early, everything later, which means fire pit's going to be rocking, the family watching the game outside, Yankees game 6, and yeah, probably wouldn't have gone well with Rodon, but I was emotionally so willing to take that chance. The fact that they aren't playing tonight versus playing and maybe having your soul snuffed out that night rather than the other night, that's something that I would take a chance on every time.
You know what I'll
Come
say?
On.
I mean this. This is not. I promise. This is not. I mean this sincerely. I wish they had lost to Kansas City.
Oh, stop,
no,
dude.
No. Hold on. Because, right? Because we all agree on this. The Yankees are going to do the same thing again next year that they've been doing for however many years in a row it's been, right? Like, definitely?
I don't know if I agree on that, but you keep going because
okay.
I don't want you to go ahead.
So,
go ahead.
So the fact that they made the World Series means that they probably incorrectly think, oh, well, you know, we made it to the World Series.
Right.
Even though it looked like they weren't playing the same sport. Like, the Dodgers look like the Kansas City Chiefs and the Yankees look like the Oregon Ducks in this World Series. Like, they weren't even playing. Like the Dodgers were an MLB team and the Yankees were a quadruple A team. They're not going to do anything to change it. Maybe if they had lost in the ALDS to the Royals, maybe that would have, like, shamed Hal Steinbrenner enough to actually do something different. Because now I think you get the same thing rolled out next year. And my betting opinion, guys,
yeah,
like, just next year's Major League Baseball season, the Dodgers are the favorite. That's always what happens. Like, the champion's always going to be the favorite. The Yankees and the Braves, who get Strider and Acuna back, are tied for the second choice in the betting market, plus 800. I think this is a great betting opportunity, way early in the process, obviously, because I think that one of the teams that is tied for the second odds to win the World Series has a 0% chance to win. Like, the 2025 New York Yankees, 0% chance to win next year's World Series. Zero.
Nick, hold on.
Good analysis there.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, fantastic. I love you. That's ridiculous, dude.
Is it?
Can you at least see what they do before you make that definitive statement?
No, I can't. No, because we've seen it before. No, we've seen it. We've seen it before. It's going to be Aaron Boone in the clutch, having to make important decisions. It's the same core of the team, which, by the way, they're losers. How are they winning?
I'm with you, Nick.
Well, I got to see what they do. I'm not saying that they are. I got to see what they do.
Well, here's the counter, Nick, that I would say. I'm with you, and I didn't think they were going to win this year, but they did get to the World Series. Now, obviously, they lost in the World Series, but
what would have happened if they had played Houston?
Yeah, they would have probably gotten beat. You're right. I mean,
they would have lost. Not only would they have lost, they would have gone down like dogs like they always do.
Probably. Yeah, probably. Are you over the Malachi Corley non-touchdown from yesterday?
Yeah, it was a rough one. You know, you bet Malachi Corley, give it out on the show. There's a really, really, like, I thought I had great, like, rationale behind that bet. And a lot of people, like, I always, like, shocked by that when I get all the tweets. Like, a lot of people, like, do this stuff, which is cool.
What were the odds on the anytime touchdown?
So, BetMGM had 11. Other domestic sports books were as high as like 37-1 for him to score a touchdown in the game.
Wow.
Yeah, listen, like I thought it was an awesome bet. He had made his debut the week before, played the same number of snaps as Xavier Gibson, who scored a touchdown. Corley's a third round pick. They're obviously going to lean towards him a little bit more. And you saw, like, he should be the team's third receiver. Like, he's awesome. Now, I hope he's not an Aaron Rodgers doghouse, because you saw on that run an obviously boneheaded play to drop the ball. Like, he's really explosive. He needs to be playing more. But yeah, like, that would have been nice. Like, give it this bet out. I bet it myself. Drops the ball at the half-yard line at a huge price. That was a little tough.
Right, and you thought you had it. And I'm with you. My first thing is like, wow, this kid is, where has he been? And then you see the replay and just the most knucklehead play that you could ever make on a football field. But you thought you had that win, and then it gets called back. That's a brutal defeat.
Count it before the dealing's done. Wow. So, Nick, not that I have a bone to pick, I have a question, though. So, as I look at my phone, this was from last Sunday, is a text from Nick to me. The Jets' refusal to cut Zuerlein's the dumbest thing they've done this season. And that's saying something. My response, very short and sweet, I bleeping hate football.
Yeah, which made me laugh.
I got you.
Yeah.
So, you couldn't text me a happy tweet like after the Jets won and Garrett Wilson had a couple of touchdowns and Rodgers looked like Rodgers. Only the negative text. The Jets won last night. Where's the happy text?
Well, they did. You know, I see my daughter's teething and I don't sleep, so I got to take the opportunity to go to sleep as soon as these games end. But yes, like, you are right. I should have given you that last night. How about Riley Patterson, by the way? New Jets kicker doinks it in, and to me, I looked at that as a huge positive that the kicker made the kick last night for the New York Jets. Good win last night for the Jets. Houston, I think, is a bit of a train wreck right now, but that's not to take away from what the Jets did last night. And, like, looking at the Jets' schedule now.
Oh, here we go. Here we go.
Yeah,
let's go, baby.
It. Let's hear it.
Okay. All right. So.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's better over here.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
Okay.
Here we go. This is great.
All right. All right. So they're 3-6, right? Okay.
Yep.
Next week, on the road in Arizona, the game is likely to be, and let's just use the betting market as a guide. And, like, let's leave our opinions out of it for a second.
Okay, go
whether
ahead.
We think they'll win or lose. They're going to be basically like a pick 'em next week on the road. And like, depending on what Arizona kills the Bears on Sunday, Arizona will be more of a favorite. They get killed, the Jets will be favored. Let's call it a pick 'em, like less than 3 either way. Like, basically pick the winner of the game.
Okay.
From there, we have the Jets will be favored at home against the Indianapolis Colts. Like, definitely, with Joe Flacco as the quarterback. They will be favored at home against the Seattle Seahawks.
Yep, that's after a bye, by the way, for those who don't know.
Mm-hmm. So that's November 17th, Colts, December 1st, Seahawks. Then at Miami, like, Miami might be favored in the game, but, like, we're talking, like, one. Things assuming that all the principals are healthy. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a coin flip game. On the road in Jacksonville, Jets are favored. Home against the Rams, Jets are favored. On the road in Buffalo, they're like probably like 3.5 in that game, maybe more. They're dogs in that game.
Yep.
And then home Miami in week 18, favored.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, it could be a path here to where they could, we were talking about it, go 6-2 potentially and get themselves into the postseason at 9. Do you think 9 wins gets it done in the AFC?
It's tough. Like, okay, so, and I know Jets fans because I'm a Giants fan and like I did this growing up. You root against every team in your conference every week, basically. You need everybody to lose. Like, Jets fans, you need Denver to start losing games big time, especially because Denver beat the Jets head to head. You need the Steelers to start losing games and their schedule gets a lot tougher. Steelers are on the bye now. The schedule for the Steelers is, Steelers might only win 2 games the rest of the season.
Love it. Love
it. Their schedule is ridiculously tough.
Chargers.
I think the Dolphins stink.
Chargers.
Yeah, and the Chargers are 1.5 on the road in Cleveland this week. I like the Browns in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there is a path. There is a path for the Jets. There's a path.
Nick also had, I should say, I was listening to the Sunday show, driving back from my mother's house last weekend. I loved it the whole hour. He's going nuts, picking these games, and he nailed the Browns and Jameis over the Ravens, which is a huge upset right there. It was a good poll, amongst other stuff. Where are we at, Nick, with your Giants here? All right, maybe there's a path for the Jets to get back in it.
More depressing than the Yankees is the answer.
I mean, look, Daniel Jones is the big, you know, should they start him, should they not? He's obviously going to start in this game. Can they beat, and the Giants have been so frustrating because they've been better than their record says, but ultimately, well, I mean, I think they are. What's your thoughts on the Giants then, where they're at right now going into week 9?
The quarterback's horrible. Like, you can't win games in the NFL if your quarterback stinks. He's brutal. And he's starting now. And I actually, part of me likes this, and part of me thinks, like, he knows it's over. For whatever anyone thinks about Daniel Jones, and I think he's terrible, right? For whatever anyone thinks about him, you can't say that he hasn't like handled himself with class. And like he's never embarrassed the organization. He's always handled himself really well. You started to see on Monday night, he's losing his patience. He's losing his temper. He's dropping F-bombs. He's never done that before. And how about at the end of the game, like say what you want about Jones again. It's always been like he's a really smart guy. Like he's in command of the huddle, etc. And then when the play starts, he's terrible. Biggest play of the game, doesn't put the tight end in motion to chip on. You know, just, you know, arguably the best pass rusher in the last decade in the NFL. Here's TJ Watt, one-on-one with Jermaine Illuminor. How's that? That's, you know, Tyson versus Spinks. How's that going to go? Of course he gets stripped. And strip sacked on not the blind side. So little awareness from him. I think he knows it's done. I think he knows he's done. I think he knows he's on a short leash. And I don't think you can win games in the NFL, Sal, unless you've got, like, the 2000 Ravens defense. If your quarterback stinks, he stinks. It's over. We are so past. This is like, you know, going into your refrigerator, and it's November 1st, and pulling out a gallon of milk for your cereal or whatever, and looking at it, and, like, the milk expired in July. Like, that's where we're at here with the expiration for Daniel. We are so far past the expiration date at this point. It's an insult to Giants fans that this guy keeps getting trotted out there as the starting quarterback. That's my opinion on the team.
And, you know, I don't think that you're wrong. I mean, Drew Locke, I mean, if you had a better option, wouldn't that be more appealing? I mean, I'm not saying you're wrong. I agree with you, but he's going to go to Drew Locke?
I just think we've reached the point, and again, this is kind of goes into why I don't think Brian Daboll and Joe Shane deserve another chance to come back. Because I think they planned very poorly last season, and I think they planned very poorly this season. So, BT, I understand what you're saying. Like, let's say, you know, I think Jones is bad. He's definitely better than Drew Locke.
Yep.
He is better than Drew Locke. That is true. But in a lost season, they're 2-6, where, like, you have to get a franchise quarterback. Like, at what point do you say, like, let's soft tank a little bit here? And I'm not suggesting the players won't try or they shouldn't try to win, but organizationally, you can put your finger on the scale a little bit. By the way, like the Eagles did in Week 17 a couple years ago, when the Giants with Joe Judge, like, almost won the NFC East at 6-10, and the Eagles pulled Jalen Hurts in that Sunday night game against Washington for Nate Sudfeld and marched Doug Peterson up there to tell us Nate Sudfeld was the best option, and then they fired his ass 2 days later. Like, organization's got to tip the finger on the scale a little bit. Like, at what point do we say, forget about, like, trying to win this game on Sunday? Because I'll say this to Giants fans out there. Like, those Tommy DeVito wins were really fun last year, right? They were great. Wouldn't you rather have Jaden Daniels or Drake May? Like, can we think about the future here, please? So, many reasons why I think Drew Locke should be the quarterback. I think we are way close to the end of Daniel Jones. Also, I love the Commanders covering the spread on Sunday.
Wow. All right, give me something else here, because as the Jets and Giants, you know, I know the Jets are trying to save their season, but the Giants going the wrong way in a hurry. We're going to start to talk more around the NFL here. What are we looking at from the prop king on this Sunday, and maybe a best bet otherwise in one of the games this weekend?
All right, so I'll give you two props. I'll give you one in the Giants game, and then I'll give you another. So, Giants Commanders, Malik Nabers obviously gets, like, a ton of headlines because he's awesome, right? And in week two against the Commanders, he had that huge game, right? He had, like, 18 targets, 127 yards. He was great in that game. The difference between the Giants in week two to right now is that Darius Slayton's now playing, like, 100% of the snaps. And Darius Slayton's pretty good. It's a 100-yard games recently. So Slayton's receiving yards prop in this game is 34.5. I think Slayton clears 40 yards in this game pretty easily. So I like the Darius Slayton over. I'll give that out on the show on Sunday. One other prop will be, I think sportsbooks continue to get A.J. Brown's price wrong for the Eagles. Every week his number's in, like, the 70s, and every week he goes over 100 yards. That offense with Kellen Moore running the show is Saquon Barkley and A.J. Brown and Jalen Hurts at the goal line and a little Devontae Smith. A.J. Brown over 76.5 receiving yards Sunday for the Eagles against the Jacksonville Jaguars. A couple sides. I'll bet the Broncos plus the 8.5 on the road in Baltimore against the Ravens. I think Denver's live to win the game. I don't like it, Sal, as much as I liked Cleveland last week.
Mm-hmm.
Baltimore's defense is not nearly as good as its offense, and I think Bo Nix and the Broncos offense can move the football enough and score points, like, to keep Denver inside the number here. The total keeps getting bet up, which to me means that's confidence in Denver being able to score. So give me the Broncos plus the 8.5. How about the Lions and the Packers? So we think Jordan Love is going to play now, right? He was back at practice yesterday. If we get official word that Jordan Love is going to play, I'll bet the Packers plus the points against the Detroit Lions. I do like Green Bay in that game. And then, you know, we have to continue to give a shout-out to Giants legend, Raiders head coach Antonio Pierce, who in addition to being Super Bowl 42 champion and Giants hero, is also the patron saint of covering big spreads as an underdog, because Antonio Pierce is dying to take an 8-point deficit and make it a 5-point deficit. He loves to send out the field goal unit. He loves to punt. He's trying to cover spreads. This week, the Raiders are getting 7 on the road in Cincinnati. Pride and poise, commitment to excellence. Just cover, baby. Give me the Las Vegas Raiders getting the points.
I heard all this material on Sunday. I was laughing my ass off listening to that. Nick, you do a great job. We appreciate it. Looking forward to talking to you again next week.
Look, thank you very much, guys. Wishing everyone minimal sweats, winning bets, the absolute very best of luck. And BT, I know you're super optimistic. It's time, like, to come to the side of reality here, at least with the Yankees, my man. I hate to say that.
I'll trust my reality, and I'll ride forward with it, and we'll see what happens. I mean, your reality is not my reality there, Costos.
Honestly, it's probably good for you.
Thank you, Nick.
Thanks, brother.
That was the host of You Better, You Bet, and Odyssey Sports Betting Insider, Nick Costos. Insider calls are presented by BetMGM. Go check out all the latest lines today on the BetMGM app. Coming up at 1:20, we will have our Perfect Parlay Pick segment. There's been a change at the top, the leaderboard. BT cashing another perfect parlay. Been good back and forth this year. We've been cashing them in the different weeks.
Yeah.
Hoff is trailing right now. Last year's champ is trailing right now.
He's in third?
He is in third by a pretty decent distance.
Nice.
You and I are atop the leaderboard, so we'll get into that. Also, your calls when we come back, 888-808-1019.
That's a good spot with Costos.
Brandon Tierney, Sal Licata back on the Fan, 888-808-1019 on this Football Friday. We'll have our Perfect Parlay Pick segment coming up at 1:20. We'll continue with your calls. We've been talking a lot of Jets. We worked in the Giants a little bit there with Nick. We could do that maybe, BT, coming up at 1 as well. Just look ahead to the Giants and Commanders game. And look, this will be the final time, like, with the Giants. The storyline's the same. How many times can you say it about Daniel Jones? But if the Giants could somehow win this game, another division game at home, I really don't think the organization could afford another dud at home against Washington. I don't care how good Daniels is in Washington. You can't afford another embarrassing effort.
This one would be really, really, I think, potentially disastrous for the Shane and Dable duo. You know, and I was on with one of our friends over at WTM down in D.C., part of the Family Odyssey, and I was doing a Giants hit with him yesterday. And this came up, and he asked, you know, my belief of the future of the Giants and all the things that we've talked about, you and I and many others. Like, I definitely think Dable right now will be back. I think he should. I like him. I do think the 2.0 version, wherever that is, could be better, but whatever. Those are things that I've said. But the thing about this weekend with the Commanders game is that the Commanders, Sal, they were the one team that the Giants could look in the eye and say, all right, well, Dallas is better, Philly's definitely better, and we could tie you, or we can narrowly beat you, or we can narrowly lose to you. Daniel Jones historically plays well against the Commanders, pretty much the only team he plays well against. And now you're like, even that's gone because they are in first place in the division. They've got a young man who, I mean, he actually could mess around. He won't, but could mess around and win the MVP maybe this year as a rookie. Again, he won't, but he's in the conversation. And I would think he'll win one or two before it's all said and done if he stays on this trajectory and stays healthy. So in all, like in a lot of ways, the Commanders and the Giants, were looking eye to eye for about 5, 6, 7 years. Now the Commanders have flown past them.
Yeah.
If there's empty seats or if there's a lot of Commanders fans or if they get waxed, optically, that's going to be bad for those guys.
And I do think the Giants have a chance to win this game here, but this could be I'm almost at a point where I just don't even care about Daniel Jones. Like, how many times can we say it about Daniel Jones?
I'm already there.
Yeah, we've been there, right. But I can't even get into the, should he be playing? Should he, like, I honestly can't do it anymore with Daniel Jones. I'd like to see this team actually just win a game here. Remember, they should have won the first time that they met. Joe is in the Bronx. What's up, Joe?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Before I get to my Jets point, what is the state of New York sports that Sal is going to soccer games? And BT is willing to let go of Juan Soto in order for his team to go deep in the playoffs. What is going on?
It's fair, what it is, Joe. Buddy.
I mean, that is fair. I will say, look, it's a playoff game. I mean, it's a Red Bulls playoff game. There's something about it. I'm not a big soccer guy. I don't know. But there was something that was fun about it, so I'm looking forward to it. But you're right. I mean, you're right, Joe. I'm going to a soccer playoff game. BT's ready to let Soto go just so we can have a little taste of the Jets in the postseason.
And the Johnnies getting into, remember, that was part of the deal. Yeah. The Johnnies with an NCAA win.
Here's what's happened. Baseball season's over, and the two football teams stink. That's what happened.
It's pathetic. So about the Jets, that catch that Wilson made, honestly, I think it's better than Odell's.
I think it was tougher. I think the degree of difficulty was more.
Yes, absolutely. But also, the Giants lost that game.
Yeah. Dallas.
Nobody remembers it because it was just talking about the catch.
Yeah.
Right. The Jets won, and he had two one-handed catches, one better than the other. So I think, honestly, that was a better overall
catch. Thank you for the call, Joe. We appreciate you checking in. But if you just go, because, again, I don't want to make a huge deal about the catch. Oh, big catch. It's more important that Garrett Wilson sustains this type of play. You need less all-time jump man catches and more sustained, successful football for Garrett Wilson to be looked at as a tremendous receiver. But if you're going to compare the two pound for pound, watching Odell's live, where he caught it down the sideline, I remember feeling like that was just a gut feel was a more impressive catch than Garrett. Just me personally, my feel. More maybe improbable, shocking catch running all the way down the sideline like that. I don't remember the exact distance on it, but it felt to me like the better play. But I think Garrett Wilson's a better player.
Well, the crazy thing about Wilson's catch is that, it wasn't like just a little, you lofted up from the six-yard line and there's no juice on the ball. Aaron Rodgers threw that. I don't know exactly what it officially went down for, but I don't know if you have it in front of you, 30-something?
Yeah, I thought so.
I think you're right. I thought I saw a 36-yard touchdown. He threw it a couple of yards behind the line of scrimmage. So it probably traveled a good 42, 43 yards in the air-ish right in that neighborhood.
What was Odell's? We have the measurement.
I don't have that.
Let's do a tail of the tape.
All right. But when you think about this, when you throw a football 42, 43 yards just to get it, 42, 43 yards, you got to put a little extra smoke on it. I mean, not that you got to it's not like a 70-yard throw, but it's not a 6-yard throw. So to do that one-handed from that position was amazing. Now, it's different. The Jets had no rivalry with the Texans, and the Jets season before last night certainly seemed as if it was 100% over versus the Giants and the Cowboys.
20, he had two. One was 21, one was 26.
It's about OBJ. Last night. So the 26-yarder was the second one. The 21-yarder was the tip with the one hand and the catch and run. All right, so still, you catch it 26 yards on a fly, a couple of yards. That's 32, 33 yards on the fly. You got to get it there.
Right.
And it's got a little juice. That was an amazing catch. If nothing else, because we can get wrapped up on the degree of difficulty, whatever. You liked Odell's catch better, you love Garrett, whatever. Whatever you like better, that's fine. But what it does for me is that it probably reinforces in Rodgers' mind, and this is good potentially for the Jets moving forward, hey, all right, now I see what the young buck could do. I've seen some film, we've had a couple of nice hookups, but now I could just throw it up and trust that he can go get it. And Rodgers, when he has that freedom and that trust, now you have a next-level relationship.
That, to me, is more important than the skill of the catch. Great catch, sure. And I get people getting excited about it. That's not the biggest deal. All right, we'll come back and get more of your calls in. 888-808-1019. Jets, Giants, Yanks. That's been the topics today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allowed 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC's senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.